Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Okay, get ready. We're finishing up the in section, the networking section of the Slackware packages. The first one is maybe not so spectacular. I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It's YP Tools. YP, or rather NIS, was a protocol for Sun Microsystems, which developed Solaris before Oracle purchased Solaris and Sun Microsystems went out of business. And so they needed, you know, I mean, they were a big computer company. They did a lot of networking, to say the least. And they needed some way to share information between computers, specifically login information like Etsy groups, Etsy password, and whatever else. And so they came up with a system called the Sun Microsystem Yellow Pages, YP, Yellow Pages. Yellow Pages was a reference to phone books. I've used them in the past. I don't remember a whole lot about them because I wasn't a serious user of them. But I believe that Yellow Pages, if memory serves, that was the business listings of the phone book. The White Pages had people's phone numbers, like names, last names, first initial, phone number on them. But the Yellow Pages were like more for businesses, if I recall correctly. I don't know how that really translates to this because this is all about users. But I don't know, I guess it made sense at the time. So anyway, Yellow Pages, that's the reference. That's why this package that we're about to talk about, or that we are talking about, is called YP Tools. In YP Tool, in the NYP Tools, now I'm saying NYP, like the New York Police or something. What I'm trying to say is, within this package, which is called YP Tools, you have a bunch of applications meant for clients. And then you have some other applications meant for a server. Because you do need, in this model, in this setup, you need a sort of a domain, like the NIS server. So NIS is Network Information Services. And YP, the Yellow Pages, provides NIS, Network Information Services. So all the tools are called YP, something, something, something. But the thing that they do is NIS. So I'll be talking about both a little bit, as insofar as I'm going to talk about anything. So the YP tools, the applications like YP Cat, YP Match, YP Password, YP Witch, those are client things that you, as a client on an NIS driven network, might need to use to maybe get a little bit of information about who you're connected to, who you're getting information from, that sort of thing. The applications in user SBIN, like YP bind, YP poll, YP push, YP serve, those are things that probably an admin would use, or someone running like the main server for these network services. There doesn't have to be just one server. You can have your main server, your main YP or NIS, whatever it's called, server, and then you can have lesser servers that kind of look to it for all the centralized information and kind of you copy all the updated what they're called NIS maps. So they copy those and kind of get an update on what the network looks like today or whatever. And then all the clients, none of them are serving NIS information. They are just consuming it. They're just understanding like where the printers are and where the file shares are and where the NFS share is and all that other good stuff. And also, I guess, you know, for remote login, not remote login, but like migratory login, like you might go over to this computer there and log in, but your home directory is somewhere else, like on an NFS share. All that kind of information can be managed by this sort of protocol, this methodology. The thing about it, though, is in the words of the maintainer of YP Tools, Thomas Thorsten Kukuk. I probably completely mispronounced his name. He says on the website, which is thkukuk.de, if you go to /NIS, he says, NIS is really old and deprecated. There is no further development of the code. It is strongly recommended, if only for safety reasons, to look for a more modern solution. So the maintainer of this package advises you essentially against using this, you know, the thing that this package supports, which I take to mean I've already spent too much time on it. You can look at the configuration if you really want to try to set up an NIS system within your own network for whatever reason. Go to the Linux Documentation Project, tldp.com. And there is a there's an NIS how-to there, and it does explain more or less how to set it up. I stepped through it as much as I could, and it was not a successful experience. It was an experience. It just didn't result in a successful in what I was setting out to do. Basically, you have to, and there are a couple of differences between what's documented on TLDP versus what you have to do on Slackware, which isn't unheard of. Did I say TLDP.com? I meant TLDP.org. I don't know what I said. TLDP.org/how-to/NIS-how-to. That gets you to the starting point, and then eventually you read in there where you go to the NIS server to set up. It's not the best TLDP sub project I've ever seen. The documentation is pretty confusing. It's pretty non-linear. You're jumping around a lot trying to figure out whether you're on the server or one of the lesser servers or on a client, and you're not really sure what files you're supposed to be putting the sample configurations into. And then you've got further complications like RPC info. What's RPC info? I don't know. Slackware doesn't appear to have it, I don't think. I think it didn't have it. So I ended up just launching /etc/rc.d/rc.rcp because I remembered that from NFS. So I had that started, and then I tried to start /etc/rc.d/rc.yp to start the yellow pages. It warned me that I didn't have a domain set up, so I set the domain name to the domain name that I had set on the NIS server that I was setting up, and then my client could just never find that server. So I don't know. It wasn't a great experience. I didn't enjoy it. It sort of ended up just kind of, I wouldn't say crashing my terminal, but I mean it would hang a lot, and it would be, I would do like a YP poll to try to find the server, and it would just kind of, it would just hang. I guess it might have been doing something. There's a dash debug option for it. YP poll dash debug dash broadcast seemed to be doing stuff for a while, but then YP bind dash debug dash broadcast. It would appear to be doing the thing that it was supposed to do, but then it would just like stop, and it wouldn't tell me whether it was working on something or whether it had just whether it had failed but didn't feel like ending. Like I don't know what was going on. So I'm not a fan. I'm not a cursory glance between the developer telling me not to use the technology and the technology appearing not to work all that well. And not really being documented all that well either, which is all understandable. This is deprecated. Nobody should be using this. This is legacy support. So that's all for YP Tools. Let's talk about YTalk. YTalk is a chat application for your terminal. It's a little bit like, well, certainly like Talk, or Wall, or what's the other one? Message. A bunch of different ones that kind of talk to a computer on talk to a user on either the same computer, like assuming that you're on a true multi-user system, or apparently on different hosts entirely. It requires a little bit of setup. Some of it's practically already done in true Slackware style. So the setting to activate the talk daemon, which you do need for YTalk, which you also need for talk as well. So you kind of get more for your money. But for why talk, it needs the talk daemon to be running. And talk is listed in, you guessed it, inetd.conf. So open up /etc/inetd.conf. Do a search for talk. And there are about four entries, that are obviously, you know, actual configuration lines. They might be elsewhere as well, but when you'll see talk, dgram, UDP, wait, root, user sbin, tcpd, that's that wrapper that we talked about, in.talkd. The two lines that you want to uncomment are the talk and in talk. That's in as in November talk. Talk and in talk. Those right above, one above the other. Uncomment those. Further down, there are, I guess I could even give line numbers, can't I? Yeah, so on line 44 and 45, that's what I've uncommented. On line 49 and 50, there are alternate daemons that you can run to use talk programs from within, like, KDE applications. And that's not what we're doing. There is a ktalkd and a kotalkd or something like that. But, that's obviously not what we're using. So we're using ytalk. So uncomment those, save that, and then you need to start or restart, potentially, inetd. And that is sudo sh /etc/rc.d/rc.inetd space restart, or start if it's not already running. And that's the setup. You're good to go now. Now, if you have two users, I have it active on my virtual machine, so I just created another user. I got Klaatu and Bogus. Those are the two users. So if Bogus says ytalk Klaatu, it takes over the terminal and says waiting for connection. Oh wait, I forgot one thing. Sorry. Another setup step. Message y. You, on each host that you want to be able to get alerts that there's an incoming call, as it were, you need to do MESG space Y in their terminal. And of course, that'll only be true for that terminal session. So if you want that to be always on, you have to add that to your bash RC file. So I've done MESG Y on Klaatu's terminal and on Bogus's terminal. So now from Bogus, I'm gonna do ytalk Klaatu. Takes over my terminal, it says it's ytalk version 3.3.0. Waiting for connection. Waiting for connection. What does that mean? Well, if I switch over to my Klaatu terminal, my terminal session has been interrupted. This is this could be classified as a little invasive, and that's why you have to turn this on specifically with MESG space Y. Because if someone's working in a terminal and suddenly they get an alert within their terminal, hey, you're getting a call from this talk daemon user, that can kind of mess you up. So, it's not actually that bad. It is just something to standard out. It hasn't interrupted your work. It might look confusing to you, especially if you're in the middle of a multi-line command that you're carefully constructing or something like that. And this kind of thing, not with talk or ytalk, but on a multi-user system, this has happened to me. Luckily, it never happened at a time that was inconvenient for me, but it can be a little bit jarring. So anyway, you get an alert. As Klaatu, I've gotten an alert from Bogus. It says, talk, connection requested by Bogus at localhost. So what I can do then is do ytalk space Bogus. And again, this is a little bit disorienting because you don't have a prompt. As far as you can tell, you're just typing into the void, but it's okay. It's just that you don't seem to have a prompt. If you hit return, it opens up a ytalk window, and you can talk to Bogus now. I'll say, hello, Bogus user, and now I'll switch over to my Bogus terminal. And it says, it has timed out because I've, or not timed out, but it is offering to re-ring Klaatu because it was waiting. It appeared to be waiting too long for an answer, but it's all good now. So hello, Bogus user. I've got a message in my little thing. So now I'm going to type, hello there, Klaatu. Now, confusingly, or I find this a little confusing, when you start typing, your message appears in sort of like the upper half of the terminal, whereas your message is from your from the conversation happen in the bottom half of the terminal. And so your cursor keeps switching, like, sort of back and forth between ends of, you know, the parts of your terminal. And it I do find that a little bit disorienting. But I'll say to Bogus as Klaatu, I sure do love Linux. Hit return, switching over to the Bogus terminal. I'm caught in a loop now. I'm caught in a loop of re-ringing and accepting a conversation. Okay, maybe it's settled now. So bizarrely, I have three halves of a terminal now. I guess those are thirds, aren't they? Three different sessions. I've got the thing where I type, and then two views of Klaatu's conversation in my Bogus terminal, and two views of my Bogus conversation in my Klaatu terminal. But anyway, you get the idea. It's a chat application. You can type back and forth. When you're done, you hit Control C, and that ends the session for both users. It's a nice little direct method of conversing with someone on, as I say, the same terminal or possibly a different terminal. So let's do Ytalk Klaatu at, or no, actually, I'll, you know what, I'll, no, yeah, well, I have to start this daemon from on my desktop. Okay, so I'll do sudo emacs slash etc slash inetd.conf. And then I'll open up and comment out talk and intalk. And then I'll do a sudo sh slash etc slash rc.d slash rcinetd start. Okay. And then I don't think I have. So MESGY. So I'm doing this on my desktop. That's why you're hearing me do all of this again. Okay. So technically speaking, I should be listening for incoming talk requests on my desktop. So from my virtual machine, I'm going to do ytalk klaatu at 192.168.122.1 should be my address. And I do have an invitation from Bogus at virtualslack.slackermedia.local, so that's perfect. So I'll do a ytalk Bogus at virtslack.slackermedia.local, and it appears that I don't know that's registered, because it looks like Bogus is still. Oh, I know why. I know exactly why. Ooh, and Ytalk seems to have maybe crashed a little bit. It says there's a Ytalk error. This user doesn't seem to be logged in. And the reason for this is because it doesn't... Do I want to close that? Yes. It doesn't understand... Oh boy, these are really ugly errors, actually. Yeah, these are bad. These are really bad errors. Like, cannot reclaim my terminal. I am closing console altogether. That's not great. That's not a good end result. So I'm going to issue message Y again on my desktop. I'm going to SSH back into my virtual machine, Bogus 123, and then I'll do a message Y there as well. I'll do a Ytalk Klaatu at 192.168.1222.1. There we go. And now over on my desktop, I don't seem to have been. I don't have an invitation, and I can't get out of Ytalk again. Yeah, this host-to-host communication, I'm not convinced about this one. Yeah, the virtual, yeah, and boy, it does not handle failure well. It completely, I mean, it takes over your terminal, and you are not, that's it. That's, you're over. That's it. That's really bad. That's not great. Yeah, so I think I'll stop my experimentation there. It doesn't work. Ytalk is not working as I would expect from host to host. As long as you're on the same machine, I don't see a huge problem with it, at least from my, you know, 5 or 10 minute experimentation. It's hard to chat just with yourself for too long. It kind of gets boring after a while. So from what I can tell, that seems to work. But from what I can tell, host to host, definitely not what I would expect to have happen. Okay, so I'm going to go back into my Etsy slash inetd configuration on my actual computer, on my desktop, and comment out that talk daemon again, because I don't actually need that started, and then I'm going to restart inetd. Well, actually, do I even have to bother? No, I don't. Okay, so that's ytalk, that's yptools. A little bit of a mixed bag so far, I will admit. And I have to say, in spirit of ending the category with a whimper rather than a bang, the last package in this list that I have to cover is ZD1211-firmware. It is firmware for the ZD1211 USB wireless device. So I imagine that this is one of those wireless cards just in sort of a thumb drive form factor. And you plug it into a USB port, and now you have a wireless device. But I don't have a ZD1211 device, so I can't really comment a whole lot on this, except to say that it's great to have. I mean, it's really, really great to see that there are drivers and, you know, firmware for all kinds of devices. The more the merrier, obviously. The less we have to think about, should I buy that, you know, that little gadget over there that I need for my computer? Can I buy that and be confident that it will work on Linux? The better. I mean, that's a huge quality of life improvement for everyone. I wish it wasn't even something that we had to talk about. It still is a little bit. I have to admit, I haven't run into it. I haven't run up against it in a long while now. But then again, I also haven't purchased hardware for my computer outside of sort of standard things like a USB headset or, I got a mouse, you know, like, I mean, it, I just haven't, a webcam, you know, things that I bought now 4 years ago. So, I mean, those things I think I would expect to just work with Linux. So not something that I would really think about. Whereas there are, you know, like if you're building a computer, you still do kind of have to take a look at certain components and think, if I install Linux onto this machine, or when I install Linux on this machine, will this device work? Nobody wants to have to think about that. So drivers, firmware, all of that stuff, it's great. It should be, it needs to be open source. There's just no question about it. Like, there's no question. If you're purchasing the device, you should be purchasing everything that goes along with it to make it go. And I know that vendors are just not happy with that idea because they think that they've got some kind of secret sauce that makes their devices really, really special. But, I mean, I think that the existence of reverse engineering proves that to be completely incorrect. People are still purchasing devices and possibly purchasing more devices because there is an assurance that, yes, this thing will work with my machine. So, yeah, I'll buy it. It's easy. It's no question. So, yeah, it needs to be there. It needs to be a guarantee. It's very anti-consumer to say that it's not going to be open source. Like, the device just won't work because we couldn't be bothered to code it to work for your operating system. I respect you not spending the time and effort of coding something for someone's arguably niche platform, but then But there's no respect for not providing the source code so that someone else can spend the time and effort to do that. So there you go. That's what ZD1211 made me think about. And that's it. That's all the networking packages. We're out of the N folder at last. This is kind of exciting and also terrifying because that means we're in the T section, which is the text folder. There are only three packages, but one of them has over 45,000 lines in it. And you know, yes, admittedly, a lot of the lines in a package I just skip over because they're include files and library files and things that don't really you don't really get your hands on. But text is kind of a big deal. It is LaTeX. It is the typesetting system that I do not use. But let's talk about these packages, Fig2Dev, TextLive, and XFig, and try to make some sense of it. But we're going to need coffee to do that. So let's take a break. Okay, we've got coffee. We're ready for LaTeX, I think. So LaTeX, L-A-T-E-X, is a typesetting language specifically designed to allow you to write words in plain text, but then translate those words into a format suitable for some destination. And what that destination is up to you. And also it has evolved over time. I believe initially, as I understand it, it was specifically, it is specifically for typesetting. And specifically at the time, it was because the original author of LaTeX had written a book, and his printer was using some new typesetting technology that the author didn't love. And so he wrote his own software to do the typesetting for him. I don't know what typesetting technology the printers were using. I mean, I'm assuming the evolution there had been from, like, literally manually placing the words into those big brackets and then stamping it down onto a page a lot, and then switching it all out and stamping it onto the next page. I'm assuming that was where they were coming from. I don't know what they were going to. I guess something probably photographic or lithographic or something with the graphic at the end. But the author apparently didn't like it. He didn't like that method. And so he wrote his own typesetting language. And that's what LaTeX is. But it's not necessarily something that you have to go just to a printer with now. You can translate it into PostScript, or more commonly, a PostScript in a big ugly container called a PDF. Or you can output it as HTML, or as a Linux man page, or as a half a dozen other things, EPUB, whatever you want, whatever's appropriate for your output. So, and I should say, LaTeX is a language that I don't use, and it's not because I don't like it. I quite admire it and am a little, I am quite curious about it. The only thing is that there were two trains at the station. One was labeled the DocBook and the other was LaTeX. And I got on the DocBook train because that was what the source code for the Slack book, the Slackware manual, the official Slackware manual, that was what that was written in. Or I think technically it was like SGML or something that then I think they ported it to DocBook maybe. I'm not sure. But I learned DocBook because that was the thing that I knew most about. And then I got a job doing DocBook officially, for pay, for money. And so I really, really got into DocBook. And so it never really came up for me to go down the LaTeX path, because it was an alternate path, but it wasn't required of me. And so I've never really gotten into it. So I'm the worst person to do like much of a segment about LaTeX, and I'm going to respect that. I'm going to try to keep this relatively simple because, you know, I mean, admittedly, I just don't really know that much about it. But just to give you some idea of what we're looking at here, the concept of LaTeX is this language, but then there are commands within the language, as it were, to make text behave a certain way. Those the commands for the sort of manipulation of plain text, it's just plain text. So some processor has to scrub through your plain text files and pick up the special keywords and then take action to make to resolve what they're telling you to do, whether that's to wrap the sentence after 8.5 inches, or probably more like it, like 7 inches, because you've got margins, or to make the text look fancy, like some kind of special font that you want to use, and so on. So there's a bunch of different sort of post-processing things that really is what LaTeX does. And as with any kind of programming language, I mean, other people can do the same thing. In other words, you have implementations of LaTeX, or maybe distributions of LaTeX, and the one that Slackware happens to use is TextLive, TextLive, and you can find more information about TextLive specifically at textlive.org, I think. Am I making that up? No, that's correct. It is textlive.org. And again, that is TextLive. I'm not saying text live, T-E-X-T live. I'm saying text, T-E-X-L-I-V-E, textlive.org. This is the home of the project itself. This is like where you would go to get the thing that you really already have. Like, you've got TextLive on your computer because you're running Slackware. It's already there, unless you didn't install it at install time. They do have a full manual, so if you just want the reference, there is quite a lot of documentation on the website. But more than likely, I mean, if you've never used LaTeX before, your first stop is probably going to be learnlatex.org. That was my first stop. Learnlatex.org has a wonderfully structured and sort of progressive lesson plan and lessons for learning LaTeX. I don't know. I mean, you might not walk away from learnlatex.org having learned LaTeX, but I do believe that you'll walk away from learnlatex.org having felt like you've used LaTeX. You know, you'll have gone through the steps. There are some gaps, or at least in the course that I sort of stepped through, there were a few gaps, like they just kind of they just say save the file and typeset it to a PDF document. And that, I mean, you know, like, well, wait, how do I typeset it to a PDF document? So, like, if you're looking for a very, very basic sort of walkthrough of just the concept of, like, using plain text to translate something into not plain text, there are a couple of maybe missing portions in this, which I think is defensible in a way. I mean, they are claiming to teach you LaTeX, not the tooling around LaTeX. So there's a lot to LaTeX, and I think that's why in the TextLive package on Slackware, if I do a WC-L to get a line count on var log packages, TextLive, there's 45,549 lines in this 76.6 megabyte compressed, 467 megabyte. That's half of a gig of LaTeX files in this package. So there are quite a few commands and quite a few libraries and collections of things that we're not going to get to in this show. But what we can do are a couple of basics and then talk about sort of the design concepts of LaTeX and how it works. So I'm going to open up a file called lalatex, lala.tex, and I'm going to do a / document class, curly brace, article, close curly brace. As you can guess, the / document class is one of the commands within LaTeX, or the keywords, whatever they call them. One of the functions, maybe. I don't know the correct terminology, but function sounds good to me. So / document class indicates that this is a function of LaTeX. Curly brace tells LaTeX, it's a parameter for that function, document class. Well, what kind of document class is this? What is the class of this document? And here I've placed the word article because I happen to know from learnlatex.org that's one of the document classes available to me but you can also get a little bit of information from the package as well itself. And there are sort of modules within LaTeX, and I don't actually remember what they're called now. But like there's Coma, KOMA, and I think TextMF. A bunch of sort of like, really, I think of them as functions that you can use within your LaTeX document. Some are default or built in, while others require you to sort of include a specific package. But document class rather is just one of those that is sort of standard. But you can you if you do a search through the TextLive package, you'll see a bunch of references to article. And if you look around enough, you'll also find references to, for instance, letter size documents. So instead of, not letter size, sorry, letter style. So a business letter that you might be writing on, like, you're printing out on your printer, like on with a, what are they called? Letterhead? Like with a letterhead and like, you know, with like the your address at the top and like a salutation line and all those sorts of things, which I don't know enough about it, so I'm not going to do it. Articles I can handle, that I know. Okay, so as I said, some packages, that's what they're called, packages. Some packages some functions are built in, but then there are other packages that are installed in this TextLive distribution. You could get more, but I mean, you've got 45,000 of them or whatever it is, so you're probably okay to start. But they do exist. They're a little bit hard to figure out. There is a lot there, but and some of them are specific to specific output formats, so it can get even more confusing. But for instance, you might want to use a font, like a font package, because you don't want your printout to just look like it came out of a terminal or out of like Vim or something. You want it to have like a nice looking font. So / use package, square bracket, T1 close square bracket, curly brace, font inc, that's FONTENC, close curly brace. So this is just enabling the font encoding for your document. Then a / begin, curly brace document, close curly brace. There's going to be an end document as well, which you could do now and then type between those two tags, or you could type in your message, which is hello world, next line, this is GNU world. Order podcast using TextLive. Okay. And then / end, curly brace document, curly brace. Now I can close that, or I can just open a shell here in Emacs. Let's just do that. All right. So now I can use PDF LaTeX space, what's this? Oh yeah, lala.txt to process that text, that LaTeX file rather, into a PDF output. And if I open up my file manager here and go to my drive and find the PDF, here it is, lala.pdf. Hello world, this is GNU World Order Podcast using TextLive. And it looks really nice. It's all on one line. So one thing when I'm composing in plain text, I like to keep, in most markup languages, I like to keep each sentence on one line. That way, when you change one sentence and then commit it to git and then do a git diff, you're able to see which lines have changed rather than just a whole paragraph has changed and then you have to look through every single word to see what has changed. But then the new lines are collapsed unless you tell the markup language to respect the new line, which I did not, which is convenient because I don't even know the command for that within LaTeX off the top of my head. But there you go. There's hello world. This is GNU World Order. It's themed. It's got fonts, and it looks nice. And it's PDF, I guess. I know it is PDF. I don't guess it is a PDF. I said I guess because I don't really love PDF. But that's the example that the site the learnlatex.org keeps using, because I, again, LaTeX is a typesetting format, and typesetting, that's what PDF was, exactly what PDF was designed for, is to go to a printer. What you see in a PDF is ideally, unless something goes horribly wrong, exactly what you're going to see as the output of your printer. That's the purpose of PDF. And so in that context, I actually don't mind PDF. So there's a lot more that you can do with LaTeX, believe it or not. And depending on what kind of document class you're using, there are various functions that might be useful for a fancier document. So for instance, I have to bring my Emacs over onto the same page as my reference document, because otherwise I won't remember what's available, because I don't use this very often at all. Well, I never use this. So begin document, that's obviously the start of your documents. And I say, this is GNU World Order Podcast using text live. And then on the next line, I'm going to put backslash section, curly brace, why I use LaTeX. Well, no, I'll put text live. And then, so that's going to be a title, as you can imagine. Text Live is pretty cool. I like to use it on Linux. Okay, so now I'm going to do a backslash again and do a subsection, curly brace. Why Text Live is better than DocBook. I'm not going on record and actually saying that. I'm just doing it's drama. It's manufactured drama. Subsection, LaTeX, or Text Live rather, Text Live has much better syntax than DocBook. It also has, 45,000 times the tools. And I think that can be the end of that document. So now I'll go back down into my little shell here in Emacs and do a PDF LaTeX of lala.pdf. I don't know that that worked. There we go. Open that PDF back up. Oh, and that's very nice. Yeah. So I've got a little introductory paragraph. Hello world. This is GNU World Order Podcast using Text Live. And then one. It's numbered section. Why I use Text Live. Text Live is pretty cool. I like to use it on Linux. 1.1. So that's the subsection. Why Text Live is better than DocBook. Text Live has much better syntax and has 45,000 more of the tools. This is all working as expected. I think one of the things that LaTeX is probably most famous for is its ability to do really, really beautiful math. In fact, you may have even heard of JavaScript modules that use LaTeX style notation. They don't actually always use LaTeX on the back end, apparently, but it's widely regarded as kind of like, if you're going to do mathematical notation, this is a typesetter that can do that. Rather than rendering it in some specialized application, taking a screenshot and just plugging that in, like this actually renders or translates mathematical notation into all of the sort of the beautiful Greek letters and things like that math uses. I don't know what most of it means, of course. I'm not a mathematician. It looks like Greek to me, but it is correctly rendered as a mathematical equation, and I don't even know how to translate between that and plain text. I mean, I see the notation in some of the demos on Learn LaTeX, and I kind of get some notion of what's going on, like things being raised by a power of something. So I get some of that, and Emacs helps me out a little bit with some of the with some syntax highlighting, but I can't picture what that's going to render to. But then if I render it with PDF LaTeX, then sure enough, it looks amazing. I mean, it's a mathematical equation. It's brilliant. It's perfect. And that legitimately is difficult to do. And I think, I mean, I've definitely heard from a lot of mathematicians who I used to work with quite a lot, that LaTeX is just like the way to do that. Like there's just, first of all, I mean, I guess if you learn the note, you know, the how to transliterate the plain text notation into that you need to do in order to render the fancy looking stuff, I think you would probably stick with LaTeX just because you learned that. But in terms of just the ease with which you can get that beautiful output, LaTeX makes it so easy. And I truly do not know the equivalent anywhere else. Like DocBook, HTML, nothing else do I know an equivalent of we can render this, these characters in this arrangement so easily. Like LaTeX, I think if there is an absolute killer feature here, I think that would probably be it, which, again, I haven't learned LaTeX, and I think probably one of the many reasons I've never felt a pressure to learn LaTeX, partly, is because I'm not a mathematician. I think if I was a mathematician, I'd have gone LaTeX by, you know, one way or another. Like, even if I came to it later than DocBook, I think I would switch over to LaTeX immediately after seeing the mathematical output. Okay, anyway, that's enough about stuff that I don't even understand. So TextLive, the package, like I say, it has several hundred lines of executables in user bin, and it has a much, much more than that, like literal thousands in USR share for all the different packages that it contains, all the different fonts and the font mapping and the document classes and all of the different things that you can do with LaTeX. It's all here, 467 megabytes of it. Some of the commands we've already kind of touched on, really. PDF LaTeX, which doesn't actually exist. I mean, PDF LaTeX does exist somewhere, but it's not in TextLive. The command in TextLive is actually PDF Text, because it's not LaTeX, it's TextLive, I guess. So PDF Text, but that PDF LaTeX is sim-linked to PDF Text. So I always type PDF LaTeX because that's what ASCII Doc uses as well as its backend. And so it's just out of habit I use PDF LaTeX, but technically it's PDF Text. But that just takes the input of a TextLive file of LaTeX source code and parses it, translates it into a PDF. And that means putting the letters, the words, on the correct line and wrapping the text after a certain point based on the page size or after your arbitrary page breaks or line breaks or images or whatever you've got. And it does that, again, according to either the document class or the document class and the page size or the output expectation. That's just for the PDF, though. There are applications that instead go out to HTML. That command is mk4ht. I think that might mean make for HTML, maybe. I'm not really sure. That one took me a while to find. So it's not mk. It's make, make, for the number 4, ht. And I think the ht is HTML. That's what I imagine, anyway. So make for ht is admittedly a little bit of a weird one. You do the name of the file that you want to process, which in this case is lala.tex. Now, the thing that I finished lala.tex on was an example math equation. So I have a sentence that says, I have a math equation, and then I have a math equation that I don't truly understand in any way. But I know that it's there, so I do know that I'm going to want to use one of the math packages or modules to process this. So first I'm going to put a quote htlatex, that's for the HTML conversion, htlatex, comma, mathml, comma, mathjax, comma, svg, close quote. SVG, as far as I know, I guess I probably look at that sometime. I could probably look right now. Well, I'll look in a minute. I believe that's how the math stuff gets rendered is SVG. I could be wrong about that. We'll find out. So close quote. So I've got make for ht lala.txt quote htlatex comma mathml comma mathjax comma svg close quote. Those are the modules I want to use while processing this thing. I hit return. It tells me that the conversion starts. The input file is lala.tex, and then the conversion has finished. That was pretty fast. I'll go over to Firefox. I'll open up that file from my local file system, and there it is. As expected, it says I have a maths equation, and then in the center of the page, bizarrely, it's a little bit, yeah, I probably could have done the layout on this a little bit nicer if I knew what I was doing, but there is a really, really fancy looking math equation, and if I click on it, okay, I get a special pop-up menu, so it is not, or maybe ultimately it is, but it's not directly just an SVG. This is actually MathJax, because it's got show math as, math ML code, original math ML, copy to clipboard, math setting, math renderer, CHTML or SVG, there it goes. Accessibility, activate, collapsible math, MathJax help, about MathJax. Yeah, so it's using MathJax, interestingly. I wasn't really sure. So that's HTML, and of course, HTML is pretty closely related to EPUB, so ultimately you could probably get to an EPUB pretty easily from there, but there are already helper applications, unsurprisingly, to help you get to an EPUB, so you don't even have to do this manually. You can do an MTX run dash dash script EPUB, then a bunch of different options, like dash dash make to actually create the EPUB zip file, dash dash SVG math, in case you are a mathematician and you want those math equations that by default, you know, are going to be using MathJax maybe, but you can just have them render, like convert MathML to SVG instead, so they render perfectly in any reasonable EPUB reader. It's pretty amazing, pretty flexible, and I think as long as you get used to the different packages offered for Text Live, I imagine that customizing, getting custom output or custom-ish output is relatively simple. I mean, I know that it can get very, very complex, but until you've experienced XSL, with, you know, trying to customize XSL for your doc book, you don't truly know complex. So I don't care what LaTeX throws at you, you're probably having an easier go of it than someone trying to get an XSL file correct on DocBook, trust me. That said, I'm not going to switch to LaTeX, I'm still going to use DocBook because that's what I know and that's the path of least resistance right now. But LaTeX certainly is very impressive, and I've seen some really, really impressive output from LaTeX. And I think probably in the future, I'll either learn LaTeX or sit around wishing that I had learned LaTeX, because it is really cool. And that's as much as I can fake my way through, to be honest. But there are still two more packages in this directory, in the T directory of Slackware. And those are fig2dev and xfig. One of those is this GUI application, xfig. This is an actual, like, application that you can type in, you know, or rather look for your, you know, in a KRunner or in your menu, xfig, and it starts a very sort of old-school-looking Unix application, and it's a graphical application. It's got the toolbar on the left. It's got the menu that you have to click and hold in order to keep the menu open, or else it disappears. You can't just click on it and then scroll down. You click, scroll, and then release. So that's interesting. And this is a graphical, I mean, this is to help you make, you know, figures such as I would imagine flow charts or maybe network topographies or, whatever you need. It's a graphical, it's a little vector illustration application. Doesn't quite hold a candle to, say, Inkscape, and there's a lot of idiosyncrasies to it that today are going to feel very strange. It's endearing. It's definitely charming if you're into the old school Unix look and feel. But I mean, if you're not, then it can get frustrating to draw a box. For instance, you click and release. So just you click, right? And then you stretch the box out and then click to end it. Now that sounds normal, like if you just sort of say it out loud, but if you actually do it with muscle memory turned on, you realize that what you're probably doing is you're clicking and holding to drag and then you're releasing your mouse button, expecting it to close that box, to stop the box from going. But actually, you need to click again to get out of like that adjustment mode. And that's for all of the tools. Like, all of the tools expect you to understand that a click once means start, and then a click the next time means stop. And it's very, very disorienting. There's a bunch of different tools in here. So if you're, the best use case I could come up with was, as I said, for kind of like like flowcharts. Also, that's what I actually need right now. So anyway, I was kind of thinking of it through that lens of like, what could I use this for? And I do have a project where I need to kind of do some flowcharting type constructions. But I mean, all of this is it's a basic little vector drawing application. Why does this exist? Who is this for? Why is this bundled along with Text Live? Well, as it turns out, you can save these files as this is really tough too. Like getting it to save is bizarrely complex, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. But whenever, yeah, there it is. It just doesn't want to go into the file name field. I click in the file name, and there's no indication that my cursor is there. So I'll just call this test fig and save that. And then I'm going to close this application. So I've got this file now called testfig.fig. And if I actually, you know what I didn't do? I didn't do a less on it. Yeah, there it is. So a fig file it's plain text. It looks to me personally like an LDraw file, which if you've ever used like Lego CAD, you'll know possibly LDraw, which is the definition for a single brick or a whole model, an array of bricks. And that's very much what this looks like. It's just an array of numbers on each line, and there's no indication really of what any of the numbers mean. It's just a bunch of numbers. Some text like landscape, center, inches, letter, 100.00, single, that's at the very top. But then once you get into the actual definitions, it's just the numbers. And one can surmise that it's probably the object number or the object type, and then the coordinates of that of the origin, and then the coordinates of the end. What kind of object type presumably defines how it gets filled in or you know, gets connected, and so on. So you can kind of imagine that. So it's plain text, and that's exciting. And that's where obviously the fig to dev comes into play, because what you can do is you can do fig to dev dash L for the language, and then do latex, and then the path to your input file, which in this case is testfig.fig. And that spits out just into standard out, so you'd want to redirect it into something else probably, but that gives you the latex code to render that graphic in your latex document. And that is really cool. So this as a package, as a directory, the T directory, it's a really, really powerful directory. Like, it's only got three packages in it, but it is really, really strong. It's got plenty to learn and plenty to play with. And if you're a user of LaTeX, then I mean, this is just literally everything you need. I mean, it is half a gig of LaTeX packages and all the helper commands for conversion and output and parsing that you could possibly need. And you can write LaTeX documents and output them to whatever format that you need, and it'll look great. I think that's it for this episode. I only got through like, what, six packages or something like that. That's okay. We did finish the ends, and we have started and finished the T. I can't fake my way through any more LaTeX, honestly. So next episode, we'll start the TCL directory. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email,
with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi, my email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
Making a noise. Something wrong with it.
Well, you've always known that.